That's Take That and their version of Could It Be Magic. We have the most tenuous connection ever now between that and our next interview, because that was originally, of course, by Barry Manilow, and it was based on Frédéric Chopin's Prelude in C minor, actually, Opus 28, number 20. You wouldn't believe it listening to that version of it. We're going to talk about Stradivarius violins now and how they can not just make music, but make you money. John Axelrod has written a book called Big Notes. He's a world-renowned conductor, and he joins us now. Good morning. Nice to talk to you, John.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me well.
I can hear you absolutely fine. Am I right in saying are you in South Africa at the moment, John?
No, I'm in Switzerland, but I must tell you, there is a connection with Could It Be Magic from Barry Manilow, because when I was 13 years old, I played that piece with the Chopin Prelude in a school college show.
Wow.
So believe it or not, one of the reasons why I'm a conductor and not a singer is because my voice was changing at that moment, and everybody said, you know what, stick to the piano. And so I stuck to the piano, and now I'm a conductor, and I'm also writing books about rare instruments.
That's very funny indeed. That's hilarious. And there's quite a few huge pop records that actually were based on classical pieces, and they're kind of well hidden, but the Barry Manilow
one
is a genius.
Eric Carmen's All By Myself.
What a record. They're fantastic. The problem with it is, though, John, they tend to be about 6 minutes long, like their classical counterparts. Good to talk to you today. We are talking how to make money from rare instruments. Now, this is interesting. Hands up here. I'm a guitar player and a vocalist and a record producer and writer. So I'm a music man, basically, like you, but in another market. And let's start by talking about the Stradivarius violin itself. It's a kind of synonymous with quality and being expensive and rare and all the rest of it. What is it about the Stradivarius that made it so unique and expensive?
Well, first of all, let me just say that the Stradivarius violin is like a painting by Leonardo.
Right.
Everybody knows Da Vinci, and everybody knows that Da Vinci is now the most expensive painting ever sold.
Yep.
And, you know, when you take a name like Da Vinci, and you also take a name like Stradivari, you are not only dealing with a unique level of genius, but you're also dealing with cultural identity.
Yep.
And what makes the Stradivarius so important is that this man, who was an apprentice to the Amati violin family, developed his own special way of making violins. He used special wood and varnish. That varnish, of course, has been subject to a lot of speculation. We know the movie The Red Violin was based on the idea of a luthier like Stradivari, who made the varnish out of the blood of his wife, and therefore called it the Red Violin. There is, in fact, a real red violin. It's called the Red Mendelssohn, and it's featured in the book.
Wow.
Now, the wood itself is unique because the argument is that it comes from Venice, the wood,
okay,
and that the seawater actually helps create an absorption and a preservation of the wood that resonates much more than just normal, typical wood might resonate. And last but not least, what makes the Stradivarius so special is it is so rare. He may have lived for a very long time. Imagine a person in the 18th century living close to 90 years old. It was very unique. He was the Methuselah of his time. But he was unique, and he created only about 650 instruments that survive today. There's very rare number of instruments on the market, and because of that rarity and limited supply and the quality that it represents and the national identity it represents, you can imagine why they're selling upwards of around 11 million pounds.
So if we'd gone back then to Cremona in Italy back in the 1600s and asked a few people around, you know, in the streets and said, do you know Antonio Stradivari? They would immediately say, oh, my goodness me, very famous man, makes amazing violins. Was he famous?
He was very famous in his time.
I mean,
you know, the Medici family, Catherine de' Medici, was one of the first of the noble families to invest in rare instruments. And they collected from the time of Amati, who was the grandfather of rare instruments in Italy. They invested in a number of instruments for their own court orchestra. When a natural, organic, acoustic instrument.
Yes.
This is not a cryptocurrency or an NFT non-tangible token.
Non-understandable token, I think they should be called, actually.
And you know what? And here's the important point of why I wrote the book. Not a lot of people know about how rare instruments as an alternative asset actually outperforms the stock market, doesn't have the volatility of some of the equities of today. It actually makes the world sound more beautiful. So it's a better way to invest your money. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. And because the people who invest in these instruments offer these instruments very often to great soloists, it's a way to develop musicians and soloists' career. It's a win-win for everybody.
Now tell me, as a musician, whether this is smoke and mirrors or not. I mean, I could go out now if I had £500,000 and buy a gold leaf Stratocaster that was owned by Eric Clapton, you know, sure. $455,000. And frankly, it wouldn't sound any different to the Stratocaster I already own, particularly if I wasn't a very good player. So is it about is it about the person, or is it about the instrument in Stradivarius's case?
Well, it's a combination of the two. You could take, I use an example that the collector, Sir Jonathan Moulds, expressed in the book. You could take 10 people and put them behind the wheel of a Formula One car, and you wouldn't know anything about the car. You'd know about the driver because the driver wouldn't know how to master a Formula One, even if you had the opportunity to drive it. I mean, Lewis Hamilton is a master of the Formula One, as much as Anna Sophie Mutter is a master of the Stradivarius. Let's put it this way.
Yes.
And so you need to have people who can tame the wild horse, the way that Vadim Repin was called the Stradivarius. He had to tame the wild horse. These are people who are maestri of the instruments. They know how to play these incredibly sensitive instruments to really maximize the potential of the sound and the quality of the performance. So when you combine a collector who acts as a custodian and provides the opportunity for a great soloist to master that sound, to increase the provenance and history and value of the instrument, well, there you have, you actually have the greatest return on investment possible.
Yeah, I mean, several people argue about the kind of what it was about that particular violin. I mean, even some people have claimed that reduced solar activity in the 17th century may be the reason for the sound. And I saw an interesting quote from Dr. John Whiteley, who's a curator at a museum in Oxford. They host the Messiah Stradivarius. And he basically said, look, the shape of the sound box and all the rest of it really isn't as important as the talent of the violinist. If you took Yehudi Menuhin, he could make a great sound from an old box and a piece of wire.
That's probably true. Upside down, balancing on his head in a yoga position, probably. But, you know, it really is a combination. Let's take the Messiah as a good example.
Yeah.
It is probably the most well-preserved Stradivarius violin that we have in existence today. Uh-huh. So in the Ashmolean, it was so fantastic. It was put into the most precious hands. And as a result of this, you, of course, need to have violins that are played by great soloists, but it is a violin that goes through regular servicing because of the wear and tear of usage.
Yeah.
What makes the Messiah so special, it is not played. It is an example of a perfectly preserved instrument, just as if it was completed by Stradivari himself. And we need examples of that. Now, I might add that if one day the Ashmolean decides to put the Messiah on sale, it would break the record books beyond even a Da Vinci painting, probably.
Wow. Why were they given specific names for specific violins and like the Messiah?
Well, it was called the Messiah because somebody said, you know, nobody ever gets to hear the
I see.
It's like the Messiah.
Right.
It's a lot of promise and it never shows up.
Right.
So most of the names of the violins are based on the people who owned them. It could be the actual collector or owner,
right,
or it could be the person who played it. So Menuhin's violin, for example, could be called the ex-Menuhin Stradivarius, or it might be named after a particular owner who is part of the provenance and history of the instrument. Now, I might add, because of the limited supply, you can imagine with the value and rarity of these instruments, not just Stradivari, but the Guarneri del Gesù and the Guadagnini and Amati violins, there are a lot of copies. There's a lot of counterfeit. There's a lot of scandal. There's a lot of crime.
Yes.
That's what makes this book kind of interesting, because it's a little bit like a crime novel. You get to read about how many of these people have tried to steal the Stradivarius or copy the Stradivarius.
Yep.
Or what happened in the 19th century, you had a lot of German and French manufacturers creating copies of these Stradivarius and putting fake labels inside. So there's a lot of people out there who think they have a Stradivarius, who think they play a Stradivarius, but it's not a real one.
How awful.
And there's actually a law from the late 19th century that forces people who make copies of Stradivarius to actually put Antonio Stradivari, 1722, made in Germany.
Oh.
And then you know it's a fake.
At least it wasn't Taiwan, to be fair.
they are making it in Taiwan, too. But the fact of the matter is that it, naturally, with something so valuable and so rare, there's going to be a lot of scandal around it as well.
Absolutely. Now, you've already alluded to this, and I think it's quite important to talk about the fact that it doesn't just make money, it makes music. And if you take wine as an example, we talk about wine on the show once a week with a wine expert. People can collect wines, but what they tend to do is they tend to stick them in their wine cellar and just leave them there, never to be drunk, which seems to me to be a great pity. But that's not the case with for example, a Stradivari, in all cases, because some of them are donated to people to play.
Absolutely. And in fact, there are a variety of different ways that people invest in the instruments. If somebody has enough money, you can buy it outright. If you want to buy shares in the instrument, you can be part of a consortium. And there are several consortiums, for example, the Stradivari Trust, run by Nigel Brown in England, that does precisely this for the benefit of British artists.
Right.
Now, one thing to understand about this, I myself, I'm also a great wine appreciator, connoisseur. I've been collecting wines my whole life. I worked for the Robert Mondavi Wine and Food Center before I was a conductor.
Interesting.
And in fact, I have a blog called iambacchus.com, which is based on a quote from Beethoven where he says, "I am Bacchus." So the difference is this. With wine, of course, the conditions of storing it are essential in the same way that the conditions of preservation of a violin or a cello or a viola are essential. But you only experience the wine once you drink it.
Yeah.
And it is a very tangible, concrete experience. You taste it, you feel it. It is a concrete experience. Whereas the sound of the instrument of a violin is like my voice. It is abstract. You cannot touch your voice. You can hear it, but you can't touch it. It's not concrete.
Mm.
The only thing you can touch is the violin itself. And then it produces something from nothing. It creates this intangible abstract sound that is the voice of beauty.
Yep.
And I think what is important to understand in the difference between wine and a rare instrument is, even though they share a lot in common, they are cultural identity, they are precious in value, they need to be stored in perfect conditions, they're rare in quantity, the difference is the tangible versus the intangible. But I might add, both the vineyards of Bordeaux and the violins of Cremona are all UNESCO heritage patrimony.
Fantastic. Now, for those who are loaned the Stradivarius, I read about a guy called Paul Barrett, who's a guest leader with the Halley Orchestra based in Manchester, and he uses a Stradivarius which has been on loan for the last seven or 8 years. If I was him, I would be terrified to have something in my hand that was that expensive.
You know, you make a very good point. First of all, let me just add that he's a wonderful player. And, of course, he's trained. He's one of these maestros who can get behind the wheel of a Formula One. He's trained to play a Stradivarius. So even though at first he might be terrified, he tames the beast and he's able to make great music out of it. And naturally, when an orchestra like Halle, or as Jonathan Moulds has given violins to the London Symphony, or you might have in other orchestras around the world, it adds credibility and prestige. It attracts more donors and patrons and subscribers. It brings more musicians to the orchestras if they have violins on loan to offer. this becomes a unique selling point for an orchestra, that the audience knows that the concertmaster is playing the Stradivari. So it's an important aspect of an orchestra's identity and artistic sound and
yes.
quality. But I might also add that the criminals also know about this. And in fact, the concertmaster of the Milwaukee Symphony intentionally stalked the concertmaster of the Milwaukee Symphony, stole his Stradivarius with a taser called the Lipinski Strad.
Right.
And funnily enough, it was recovered, but the guy didn't want to sell it because it would be impossible to resell a Strad on the black market. All he wanted was the reward money. So he stole the Strad just so they would announce the reward, and then he would give it back and get the reward money. It's not an uncommon thing that happens. But, you know, this idea of loaning an instrument is important because the collectors themselves, even though they recognize this is an investment in immortality, they see themselves as custodians of an instrument that passes from generation to generation.
Right. But and accidents do happen, as we know, in life. I mean, you know, in a lesser sense, I once had a beautiful Fender Stratocaster that I left sitting down just before I started a gig, and somebody tripped on the carpet, kicked my Stratocaster into the water, which was surrounding the place that I was in. Fortunately, it was in its case, and the case held. But you can just imagine, you know, with something like a Stradivari, violin, you know, if you were with a guy who was using that and you put it down, you know, and went off for a sandwich or a cup of coffee, it's gonna clench your buttocks, isn't it?
You know, basically, in my book, I call it the dim wit factor, because there are people who leave their violins in the trunk or the boot of a taxi.
Oh.
There are violinists like one in particular, David Garrett, who unknowingly tripped on a staircase and dropped his violin, and it smashed into pieces when he was playing. And we actually know about one famous British violinist who, in his rebellious days, reduced the number of Stradivarius because he played cricket with his Stradivarius.
No! Oh,
and
my gosh!
And that one went up in pieces. So, and you know, the thing is that, like anything, you're going to have certain risks associated. So you can understand why some owners or some foundations or some banks put the violin like the Messiah in a museum or in a safety deposit box, because they don't want those risks. But it must be said that when you have a great violinist like an Itzhak Perlman or a Nana Sophie Mutter playing the violin, it does increase the provenance and value of the instrument. So it's a balancing act, and I think most collectors agree that it's in their best interest to have the instruments played by great musicians rather than just left in a safety deposit.
Absolutely. And I'm guessing that in the days when those musicians were able to travel, they didn't put it in the hold of an aircraft or in the overhead locker.
Well, you know, they actually had these incredibly unique leather cases that were water resistant. One of the most famous stories of a Stradivarius was the one that went down with the Titanic, and it was recovered, and fortunately, again, the wood was so absorbent that it was able to withstand the salt water. But it was in these leather cases that themselves protected the violin.
Amazing.
So, with a little bit of servicing, this violin was able to play once again, as it did on the deck of the Titanic.
Wow, how incredible.
So the Stradivarius survived. I can't say that the passengers did.
No, absolutely. Let's talk about, as we finish here, we've talked about making music with it, but what about making money with it? And why is it a good return on investment? In your book, you talk about various aspects, you know, capital gains tax and indefinite interest payments. We had someone interrupting you in Spanish then, but they obviously didn't like me about talking about making money. Oh no, he's dropped out now. You see, that was very interesting, marvelous. Let's just try and get him back there. Dear, technology. Right, are you there with us?
Are you there?
Yes, we are. We had someone in Spanish who didn't like the tenure of our conversation there and cut us off. So,
well, it might have been somebody who's looking for a strong. Yeah, very careful.
It was somebody wanting to put a bid in. So my question was to you, John, it's about how do they make money? How well do they appreciate, and what benefits do you have by investing in it?
You know, it's interesting that on the question of money, that's when we got.
I know, isn't it just? Isn't it just? Yeah, it was the Bitcoin owner that cut us right. off there.
Well, that's the point. You know, everybody is looking in this time of negative interest rates, in this time of high volatility in the stock market, in this time of people searching for ways to make money. They're investing in cryptocurrencies, they're investing in NFTs and EFTs and everything else. We're talking about two things in principle about return on investment. There's the personal and there's the financial.
Yeah.
On the financial side, these violins only appreciate. You mentioned Eric Clapton and the Stratocaster,
yeah.
but Eric Clapton once bought a Gerhard Richter painting for $3 million
sure.
back in 2000 and, I don't know, one or two. He sold it recently for $34 million.
Whew.
So you can understand the appreciation of value of art. The violins are the same way. The Lady Blunt Stradivarius is now considered the most expensive purchase at auction. It has been photographed in more angles than a porno star. Everybody knows what the Lady Blunt looks like at every possible angle. And here's the interesting thing. It was bought for only 84,000 quid
right.
in 1971. It was sold for $16 million in 2011.
Wow.
So you see that it only appreciates in value, especially when you have the provenance and the player who is responsible for increasing the awareness and value of the instrument.
Yes.
Now, so there is an appreciable return. It is not subject to the volatility that you have in the marketplace, and it will absolutely outperform the stock market as well as commodities like gold. So if somebody is interested in actually helping cultural patrimony, helping musicians in their musical careers, helping their society by allowing beautiful music to be played for the welfare of the society, then buy a share in an instrument if you can't outright afford one.
Yeah.
And you know that you're doing something good for the future. And that's where the personal investment and return on investment comes in, because it is an investment in immortality. And if there is one thing that everybody looks for in life, it is to attain some level of immortality.
Absolutely.
Heaven, hell, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
But this is a way that when you have your name associated with the history of an instrument that only appreciates in value and continues to survive over centuries, you know that you are making your own personal investment in immortality.
Fabulous. And I'm guessing the other bit of good advice to finish off with, if you're browsing eBay one day and you see a Stradivarius violin come up for 100 quid, I would get it checked out.
I don't think it's a real one.
No.
if you are interested to learn more about the instruments and about how they are put on sale, because, of course, it is a very exclusive club.
Of course.
Where you have dealers and luthiers and collectors and all that. The point of the book is to educate it for a more general population of musicians, of music lovers, and of investors, of course. There is the Tarisio Auction House, where you can go to their website, Tarisio, like the violin collector himself.
Yep.
And you can learn about all the instruments that are available on the marketplace, that are available for sale, and how you can participate. You can join a consortium, or better yet, you can purchase my book, Big Notes.
Oh, you're a pro. You're a pro.
And you can learn about how to invest in rare instruments.
Do you know what? You couldn't have ended that more proficiently if you'd written it down, John. That is magnificent.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
And you, John. John Axelrod, Big Notes, How a Stradivarius Makes Money in Music. The next time I play Barry Manilow, Could It Be Magic? I'll be thinking of you, John. You can be assured of that.
Could it be magic? No.
So you've achieved immortality in a kind of way, but not necessarily a good one.
Well, if you want to come to one of my concerts and enjoy the music we play, maybe that's another way of being part of your memory, your collective memory.
But bless you.
Hopefully there'll be a Stradivarius being performed in the same concert.
Been a pleasure, sir. You look after yourself, John. All the best. Cheers.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.